الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر الله
Assalamu alaikum. Peace be upon you, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a new episode of Islam in Focus. I'm your host for today's program, Muhammad Hussein Hosni. This will be our fourth episode on Islamic teachings and the third episode on the concept of God, capital G, in Islam and Islamic monotheism. Our guest on today's program is Dr. Jamal Badawi. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Jamal. Welcome to our show. Last time we were talking about the first part of the creed of the Muslims, and I was wondering if you could give us a summary of what are the major points that we've covered and to start linking them to today's session.
I would say there are three basic points that we discussed last time. First is to talk about the creed in Islam, or the confession of faith, if you will. And we said that the door to Islam, really, the statement which, if said with conviction and sincerity, would make the person automatically a Muslim, is to recite La ilaha illallah, or Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluh. I bear witness that there is no deity but Allah, and we said Allah means God, capital G. And I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. This was the first thing to emphasize, and we tried to indicate that to recite that confession of faith, there is no need for church, priesthood, or officiation. It's the matter of conviction and sincerity. Mm-hmm. The second major point that we discussed was the question as to why the Islamic creed or confession of faith starts with negation rather than affirmation. And the main reasons we described last time is that, first of all, the recognition of the supremacy of Allah, God, of necessity exclude attributing any divine attribute or divinity or godhood to any of the creatures of Allah. So by necessity, it has to be also a negation rather than simply an affirmation, negation of other than Allah. Mm-hmm. And the second main reason is that we said that even though monotheism, the belief in the one and universal God, has been preached throughout history from Adam to Prophet Noah, Prophet Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad, all of these prophets, we notice that historically monotheism has been compromised. It was mixed with philosophical and theological ideas that really took it away from its pure and simple original form. And Islam, in the final form, or the mission of Prophet Muhammad being the conclusion of this divine revelation, must take into account these deviations or aberrations of the original monotheism, and as such, it is very important to clarify negation so that we don't lapse back into these older type of errors. Thirdly, we started dealing with specific areas of negation. And we describe basically two areas. One is the idolatry or worship of idols, which the Quran has again condemned in very clear terms, and we have given citations from the Quran. And the second was the worship of objects in nature or powers in nature, like wind, the sun, the moon, and so on. And again, we quoted the Quran, indicating that these are creatures of Allah. They are really signs of His presence, omnipotence, compassion, and that they should be taken only as signs, not as objects of worship in themselves. This was about what we covered. We didn't really cover all the negations last time.
Of course, and to be more specific then, let's look at some of the concepts that history has shown us to be subject to that negation in Islam. And let's start with polytheism, for instance. How does Islam look at polytheism and what is the verdict of Islam on polytheism?
The verdict is similar to the other two negations, that it is totally untenable, illogical, and improper in talking about deity. In fact, the Quran makes a very clear tie between the unity in the order of the universe, whatever you call ecological balance, and the cosmic order in the universe at large, on one hand, and between the oneness of the Creator on the other hand. In other words, the implication is clearly made that this coordinated universe cannot really emanate from more than one will, one designer, one creator. Mm-hmm. So this is the first, the logical basis to start from, as the Quran tried to clarify. It follows from this that any assumption of more than one God or more than one ultimate authority, if you will, or sovereignty, sovereign in the universe, is contrary to what we see as a balanced order in nature. Just to give one example from the Quran, for example, in chapter 21, verse 22, it says, this is only translation of meaning, if there were in the heavens and the earth other gods besides Allah, there would be confusion in both, that is, in both heavens and earth. But glory to Allah, the Lord of the throne. High is He above what they attribute to Him. Furthermore, the Quran also indicates that the assumption of more than one deity or one God or sovereign, each of them with independent will, because a God must have or independent and absolute will, supposedly. This kind of assumption, in fact, automatically results in the possibility, likelihood, I should say, even, of conflict between those independent wills or authorities. And as the Quran puts it, that if there were more than one God in this universe, as the Quran puts it, behold, each God would have taken away what he had created, and some would have lorded it over others. Glory to Allah, He is free from what they attribute to Him. In other words, if there are more than one creator, then every creator can take away whatever he has created and just claim absolute will and power over his own creation, which mm-hmm. is totally untenable again.
Now, if we move from polytheism, which is the belief in several gods and specialized gods, if you will, to quote the Roman and Greek context, other experiences in history has shown us that people said, well, yes, many gods do not represent a tenable idea, it's an illogical concept and all that, but it is maybe logical to think of two gods, one for the good and one for the evil, sort of a dichotomy in the ethical and moral standards, dividing them between good and evil, and most notably the Zoroastrians, the fire worshippers of Persia, had that kind of a belief. They had this dichotomy between good and evil. How does Islam view that?
Well, it's viewed as one form also of polytheism. Perhaps the number is two, but it's still multiplicity, or believing a multiplicity of gods. It follows from that any recognition of any rival authority to that of the one and absolute lord of the universe, if you will, is one form, actually, of polytheism. And all the arguments and discussion that we had on the previous question dealing with polytheism would be applicable here as well. Mm-hmm. But maybe you can add a couple of more points also. When you assume the presence of two gods, then you have one of two possibilities, no more. Either that these two gods have equal powers, or that one of them is superior to the other. Okay, let's take the second assumption. If we assume that one god is more powerful than the other, then it means that the other god is really a weaker god or an inferior god as compared to the first. And when we talk about deity, the question of inferiority and weakness is totally irrelevant. It's totally inapplicable. So that's a logical contradiction by definition. If you take the other assumption, that both gods have equal power, then the question that may be interesting here is first of all to assume two equal powers, like we said before, is contrary to the cosmic order, to the unity that we see in the structure of this universe. On the other hand, what happens if there's a decision which is controversial, where there's disagreement between the so-called...
conflict of interest.
Exactly, between these two gods. The god of good wants to give life to someone, the god of evil wants him to die. Now, who's going to prevail? How do you reconcile a controversial question like that? It's just impossible. Somebody might say, all right, maybe these two gods may compromise. But when you talk about compromise, it means that you have to give a little, I have to give a little. That means your will and my will could not be absolute or final. And that, again, is a contradiction, because we said before that to talk about the God, capital G, we're talking about being who has absolute, final, and uncompromising type of authority. So on these grounds, the question of duality or having two gods is totally untenable and illogical as far as Islam is concerned. That would lead us, for sure, to conclude that there must be one creator, one will, one authority. As far as the paradox of the existence of good and evil, we can seek better explanation than assuming two gods. And in fact, in a future series, we can address this issue. But this is not the solution to assume two gods. To give you definite documentation from the Quran also, so that you realize that this is not just a personal opinion. We're talking really about something based on the teaching of God's word in the Quran itself. In one verse it says, and Allah has said, take not two gods. He is only one God, so me alone, that is Allah or God, should you fear. In another citation also, in chapter 10, verse 107, it says, if Allah do touch you with hurt, there is none can remove it but He. If He do design some benefit for you, there is none can keep back His favor. So the inevitable conclusion is that it is just another form of polytheism, totally unacceptable to the Muslim.
Mm-hmm. Well, so far we have been talking about associations of other deities with Allah, with the one and only God, whether they be in the form of idols or they be in the form of natural phenomena like the wind, the sun, the moon, things like that. Or they be bona fide deities, other deities with full-fledged deities, so to speak, two or more. Now I want to move to another area where we are not talking about association with God of other deities or form of deities or representatives of deities, but we are talking about other orders of creation, mm-hmm. like, for instance, spiritual beings. Satan worshippers, we hear in Toronto, for instance, of a huge new church called the Church of Satan. People whose whole dogma, so to speak, centers...
Charlie Manson
in the U.S., well, that was another thing. Sorcery, magic, people really making a whole faith, a whole religion, a whole belief, a cult out of that kind of thing. How does Islam view that? I know it's a very broad thing. There's too many topics involved here. But how does Islam view this whole thing of association of God with things that are not really deities, but...
Okay. You see, there are three basic issues here that really are not exactly the same. Mm-hmm. One issue is whether or not a Muslim believes in other order of creation, spiritual beings.
Right.
That's one question. A second question, whether those creatures or order of creation have independent or separate authority or power than that of Allah or God. And the third question is the issue of trying to invoke and communicate with those spirits for some purpose, like you said, magic, sorcery, or, you know, exorcism and all the stuff that you hear about. Now, on the first issue, there is no problem for the Muslim. In other words, a Muslim does believe in another order of creation or unseen creatures, if you will. Example of this, the Quran talks about the angels as one creation of Allah, and I think Jewish and Christian friends also believe in the same basic concept. So there's no problem admitting their existence, even though we can see them. Secondly, the Quran also talks about devils or the Satan. That's another, or jinn in general, as a species of creation, which is also unseen. There's no question about that. Thirdly, The Quran also talk about the survival of the soul after death. That's after the physical bodily death, the soul keeps living for eternity, even in the interim period between burial and resurrection. And this is another topic, and hopefully we'll get into that some other time also. But the main point is that there is a belief also that the soul of the humans who died, even though they have already dissipated in terms of physical body, still lingers and survives until the day of judgment and thereafter even. So as far as this first issue, yes, there are orders of creation, unseen order of creation that you cannot physically touch or see. There's no question about that. On the second issue, as to whether a Muslim believes that these have powers, the answer is most definitely no. Again, Islam is quite strict on this purity of monotheism and relating all power to where it belongs, to God, to Allah. It follows from that that these spirits or other levels of creation has no power whatsoever which are independent from God's power, have no knowledge of the unseen or the future, and all that is said about that is simply superstition. God is the one who controls everything. The third aspect as to whether one can invoke those spirits or utilize them or communicate with them, we find again the position of Islam on this is very clear. It condemns in no ambiguous terms any form of magic, sorcery, exorcism, or any similar type of witchcraft. In fact, the Quran clarifies that it's one of the dangers is that people might end up really worshipping Satan. So when you talk about the Church of Satan or Satan worshippers, it is something that the Quran has mentioned, in fact, 1400 years ago. In the word of God himself, it says, did I not charge you, O children of Adam, that you serve or worship not Satan or the devil? Surely he is your avowed enemy. So there's a very clear position taken here. In fact, this is also supplemented by the saying of Prophet Muhammad, in which he equated almost the magic with unbelief. In other words, the resort to magic, especially black magic and this sort of, is tantamount actually to disbelief in Allah. And in fact, many people sometimes resort to this kind of superstition or this kind of sorcery because somehow they feel they can seek refuge in those spirits or their protection. The Quran again is very clear. Protection comes only from Allah. Seeking refuge should be only directed towards Allah, Allah, the Creator. Just to cite one ayah to clarify it. Say, O Muhammad, to people, no one can deliver me from Allah if I were to disobey him, nor should I find refuge except in him. In fact, just to conclude, from our own human experience, we hear a lot about people who start getting into or slipping into these cults, especially in sorcery and magic, and end up going crazy. It's a very, very dangerous psychological effect, and it's a very dangerous field to get into, so one should really direct himself towards the Creator and seek refuge from him, seek protection only from him.
Great. Moving from associations with Allah of other deities to associations with Allah of other orders of creation, now let's go to the human level of creation and see what about association with Allah of other humans, in other terms, the so-called the worship of humans, if I can use the term.
This is again is part or part of the category of negation that we mentioned last time, that it's rejected, it's not acceptable in Islam. And again, it is negated in absolutely no ambiguous terms. It's a very clear, very decisive in the Quran. And this might take varieties of forms. To start with, one of the practices of worshipping other human beings is the worship of ancestors, or ancestor worship. I think it still lingers until today, I understand, people believing that the spirit of their predecessors come back to oversee and see what their children are doing. And at times they actually worship them. The Quran puts the rebuttal of this attitude in a very logical form. It simply says that since it is He, Allah, God, who created us and created our predecessor, then only Allah should be worshipped, not our predecessor. Just to quote from the Quran, for example, in chapter 44, verse 8, it says, the Lord of the heavens and the earth and all between them, if you have an assured faith. There is no God but He. It is who gives life and gives death, the Lord and cherisher of you and your earliest ancestors. The Quran also talks about the confrontation that took place between Prophet Moses, peace be with him, vis-a-vis the pharaohs and his magicians and other people around him. And he addressed them according to the Quran. He says, Moses said, your Lord and the Lord of your fathers from the beginning, from the very beginning of creation. So why worship creatures, other creatures of Allah? In more even affirmative term, we find that in the second chapter of the Quran, verses 21 through 22. And it says, O mankind, adore your guardian Lord who created you and those who came before you, that you may attain righteousness, who has made the earth your couch and the heavens your canopy, and sent down rain from the heavens and brought forth therewith fruits for your sustenance. So set not up rivals or equals unto God or unto Allah when you know the truth. So it follows from that the worship of a human being is totally rejected, not only as it relates to ancestors, but any other human being. In fact, we find in history that some of the deviation from the true path of pure monotheism has taken the form of worshipping other holy men, holy people. A righteous man who may die, for example, his grave is worshipped, and ultimately the person himself is deified or regarded as deity or as God. Even the Quran rejects the worship of great prophets and messenger of God, because even those people, great as they might have been, are still creatures of Allah. We know, for example, from history that these ideas have lingered in the past, and for example, among some of the older civilizations, even before the advent of Prophet Jesus, may peace be with him, when, for example, the Egyptians believed in Horus as the son of God, the Persians believed in God Mithra as the son of God. It's quite fascinating to notice that in both cases and others, Mithra and Horus were regarded as sons of God. Each one was regarded as a son of God, who came to expiate for the sins of humanity and reconcile man to God by sacrificing his own life. And like I said, this is quite interesting and fascinating if we know that these ideas did exist actually before the mission of Prophet Jesus, may peace be with him. So
this brings us to a very important point. How is Jesus viewed in the Quran? Is he viewed as halfway between human and divine? Is he viewed as divine, totally human? How does he stand?
In Islam, there is nothing half divine, half human. Mm-hmm. There is no order of existence or creation between divinity and humanity. Mm-hmm. Or in general, even between creator and created. A person would have to be either the creator, which is one, Allah, mm-hmm. God, or created. There's no halfway through. There's no compromises on this. So he has to be either of both. And the position of Islam is very clear on this. Indeed, instead of just using my own words, I'm referring to the translation of the meaning of the Quran in one of the most fascinating and shortest and most eloquent chapters in the Quran towards the end. It's chapter 112. It mm-hmm. reads, say, which means say, O Muhammad, to people, because this is God's revelation to him. Mm-hmm. Say, He is Allah, the one and only. Allah, the eternal, the absolute. He begets not, nor is he begotten, and there is none like unto him. The position is very succinctly put in this very, very, very short chapters. Also, we find in chapter 6, verses 101 through 102, to him, that is to Allah, to God, is due the primary origin of the heavens and the earth. How can he have a son when he has no consort? He created all things, and he has full knowledge of all things. This is Allah, your Lord. There is no deity but he, the creator of all things. Then worship you him, and he has power to dispose of all affairs. So there's no mediating authority, there's no in-between type of existence. And since you're asking particularly about Prophet Jesus, may peace be with him, we find that his name is mentioned in the Quran frequently. And like I said, that could be a whole topic itself. Jesus in the Quran could be a separate program, but just to give you the sense of it, in the fifth chapter, verse 78 in the Quran, it says, Christ, the son of Mary, was no more than a messenger or prophet. Many messengers passed away before him. His mother was a woman of truth. They had both to eat their daily food, just like any other humans. See how Allah does make his signs clear to them, yet see in what way or what ways they are deluded away from the truth. Another citation to clarify it further. And they have taken beside him or beside Allah gods that can create nothing but are themselves created, that have no control or hurt or good to themselves. They cannot control or hurt themselves, nor can they control death, nor life, nor resurrection. This is in 25th chapter, verse 3, which shows clearly that all of those human beings, including great prophets and messengers, including Prophet Jesus, may peace be upon him, are creatures of Allah. They are people who do not control life. They cannot defend themselves against death. They cannot bring themselves to resurrection without the permission of Allah, which means, again, there's only one authority in the whole universe. One more citation, just to make sure that, again, I communicated the answer reasonably clearly. It says, it is not possible that a man to whom is given the book, that means revelation, and wisdom, and the prophetic office, should say to people, be you my worshippers rather than Allah or God. On the contrary, he would say, be you worshipper of him who is truly the cherisher of all. For you have taught the book and you have studied it earnestly. Nor would he instruct you to take the angels and prophets, notice here, angels and prophets for lords and patrons, would he bid you unbelief after you bowed your will to Allah in submission or in Islam. This is in the third chapter, verses 78 through 79 through 80. And notice here again, the emphasis is being made on the fact that the prophets view themselves as servants of God. And this is not really a demotion of them. The biggest pride for any human being, including all those great messengers of God, including Muhammad, Jesus, Abraham, the biggest pride is to say that they are true servants of Allah. And in fact, if you go back even to the New Testament, you find lots of citations that would support this position of their basic humanity and humility at the same time.
So to be the servant of God is really an honor.
Exactly.
Not a subjugation, not
exactly.
A degradation. Well, Dr. Gamal, that was very interesting as usual. I think we don't have enough time for any more questions today, but we promise to continue with the concept of worship of human beings and look at it from different perspectives that we haven't covered this time. And if we have time, we may even get into the affirmative attributes of Allah next time, God willing. And until we see you next time, I bid you all the blessings of Allah and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله